Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families for 100 years. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 16th day of March, 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Rich Nelson at Allendale. They just released their updated numbers for the growing season as it relates to crop acreage. We'll discuss that survey during the Closing Market Report today, and we'll take a look, too, at what it means to plant soybeans after soybeans and how those might fit into the crop budgets for the state of Illinois. For those of you in the northern part of the state and the southern part of the state, it might be a possibility. More with Gary Schnitke a bit later as we make our way through this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here's what the numbers finished up like in Chicago for this Wednesday afternoon. May contract in the corn pit at $3.68 and a quarter, a quarter of a cent lower. July at $3.73 and a quarter, down a quarter. And September down a quarter at $3.78 and a half. December futures $3.86 and a half, three quarters lower. The March down a half at $3.95 and a half. Soy complex now May beans up 2.5 cents for the day, $1.94 and a half, the final price. July at $9 and a quarter, up 2.5 cents, and the August at $9.02 and a quarter. 2.25 higher. November beans at 9.05, up 2.25, and the January futures at 9.09 and a quarter, a finish up 2.25 as well. Bean meal May contract 267.70, down 50 cents for the day. July at 270.40, down 60. The bean oil up 20 at 32.69. Soft red winter wheat May contract 6.5 lower at $4.70 and 3 quarters. July the harvest month at 4.78 and a quarter, down 6 and a quarter, and July hard red at 4.93 and a half, down 5 and a quarter. Live cattle futures in Chicago at 141.57 and a half cents, 85 cents higher. June at 130.82 and a half, up 50 for the day. March feeder cattle at 164.37 and a half, up 40 cents in the April at 165.55, up 75. April lean hogs at $71.32 and a half cents per 100 pounds, up 60 cents. May futures at 79.40, 15 cents higher. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us online at willag.org. That's WILLAG.org. There you'll find our winter meeting schedule, and it's wrapping up quickly. Just Taylorville left tomorrow night, and then Saturday we'll be in Joliet at the Chicago Farmland Forum. Find it online at IPM.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson. Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
Here's what some of the outside light markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures at $38.49 a barrel, down, or rather up, $2.14. Ethanol futures for the day, $1.43 and 3 cents, a tenth of a cent higher. Gasoline, the RBOB, that's the wholesale price, at $1.41 and 4 cents, up 0.6 cents. Heating oil or diesel fuel, $0.05 and 2 cents higher, at $1.22 and 9 cents per gallon. Natural gas for the day at $1.86 and 8 cents, that's $0.07 higher. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 17,320, up 76 points. U.S. dollar at 95.92 is down 0.758. And the gold futures on the day are currently trading at $1,258.75. They're up $27.75. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area today. Mostly sunny, a high of 61 degrees. Windy out there with a west wind at 30 miles an hour, gusting to 47. Partly cloudy, a low of 39 this evening. West-southwest winds at 9 to 16. And then tomorrow, mostly sunny skies, a high of 56. Breezy again with 14 to 19 miles an hour, gusting to 20 to 25, and staying up as high as 36 during the day tomorrow. And then Thursday evening, partly cloudy and a low of 34 degrees. West winds at 6 to 13. Friday, partly sunny and 47. Northwest at 7 to 10 for the winds. And Friday night, mostly cloudy, will drop to 31 degrees. At the bottom of the half hour, we'll take a complete look at the weather forecast. Drew Lerner from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City will join us to talk about the growing regions in North and South America.
Support for WILL comes from the Friends of WILL and from Busey. Whether sending your child to college next year or in 18 years, invest in their future with Busey. Busey, your dream, our promise.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on the 16th day of March, 2016. We're joined now by Rich Nelson. He's from Allendale out of the Chicago area. If I remember right, you're in McHenry or somewhere in that place along the Illinois-Wisconsin border. Where exactly are you located?
We are located in McHenry, which is just a few minutes away from the Wisconsin border. And as far as Chicago, we're roughly about a 40-minute drive straight northwest.
Yeah, so this morning, Allendale, and we'll take up the marketplace in detail in just a moment, but this morning, Allendale released their latest survey, and you've been doing this for a long time, surveying producers, asking them what acreage they might be planting this year. Those numbers were released earlier today. They are up on the website at willag.org, but of course, people can check out Allendale's website as well. What did you find?
You know, we pretty much found maybe a little more corn acres than we originally expected, 90.4 million acres. That's an increase of 2.4. And also important for the marketplace, this is actually a little higher than USDA's 90.0. So a little more corn acres, and actually we're surprised on soybeans that most farmers agreed with what USDA suggested back in February, which was numbers very slightly lower than last year.
And then you went ahead, and this is also on both our website at willag.org and your own website, I believe, and took that acreage on out and said, well, what does it imply for production, but you don't have ending year stocks for the 2016-17 season. Can you give me both of those?
You know, certainly as far as the numbers go on the production side, 13.632 on the corn, and that's actually an increase over this past year of about 31 million bushels. So a little higher production seen. Once you get down to the ending stocks, we do have maybe, like I said, a little bit of different numbers on demand than what USDA is looking at. We see that going right now to about 1.8 billion bushels. So as far as this goes, numbers very close to the current situation on corn. Over on the soybean side, we're looking for a crop of 3.722 billion bushels. That's actually a good decline from last year. In fact, a good 207 million bushel decline. And that does help us, at least on this end, for the soybean ending stocks here, getting us down into the numbers, actually into that 400 million bushel range.
How do you achieve that? Is some of that done with your trend yield?
And it's exactly right here. We're using a little bit lower yields than what USDA is implying. In fact, in February, they came out with a very aggressive 168 trend yield for corn, or maybe a little more reasonable with a 165. As far as soybeans, keep in mind we're coming off of what was a record crop year, a record yield year, and now we're down to about 45.6 for our yield numbers.
Anything else from the survey numbers that you drew out that we haven't seen yet?
Yes, there's actually one thing I'd be happy to share with you guys, and that's the other questions we ask with producers, which is about the farmer sales on old crop and new crop. Numbers for old crop sales, they told us this year 64% of old crop moved out. That's down from last year's 68. New crop corn sales, only 8% moved out, or 8% sold, down from last year's 16. Same type of story here laid out for soybeans. Lower sales across the board, and that probably wasn't a big surprise here for us, though.
So I would think over the last 4 to 5 days, you folks have been confabbing up there, thinking about what this means for your marketing plans for the growing season. What did you come up with?
You know, pretty much we're leaving all of our price outlooks actually unchanged. These numbers don't change our story too much here. In general, we still look for a moderate rebound left in corn prices going into planting, a normal decline after planting's done here, getting down into that late April, May time frame. However, unlike many groups in this industry, we actually do look for a sizable weather rally here in the summer, getting prices up to $4.40 on corn, and November beans just over $10 for a short period of time.
So you've advised, I'm guessing, of course, crop insurance. And did you put that at where they were in the previous years, or did you ask them to save some cash there?
And as far as our main point on crop insurance side here, a lot of guys did want to save some cash, regardless of what we would have recommended anyway. I'll be very clear about that here, Todd. So in this case, yes, we are doing very similar to last year as far as crop insurance numbers. And I would not expect the payout allowance, at least based on our price outlooks.
So you've got the baseline in and then looking forward to some higher prices. So I assume you're waiting still for the weather to arrive and thinking that there might be some opportunities to market. Have you set yourself up in any other forms?
And as far as that goes, we actually have, of course, recommended some cash sales previously. So that part of the argument is done on the old crop side. We still have a little bit left that we'd recommend guys to hold on. Like I said, for new crop, though, we are certainly going to be holding on any aggressive sales here until we see $4 at a minimum on this December corn contract.
Now let's take up what happened in Chicago for the day. Bean futures were again a little bit higher. They've been holding strong at the top end of their trading range. And this has happened now for about 10, almost 2 weeks. They climbed and then have been holding strong since they got to this top end of the range for 4 or 5 days now. Can they maintain this? Because previously they dropped back fairly quickly.
In general, I think for right now they can. One thing which is helping us out certainly on the bean end is our few other factors than just straight U.S. fundamentals. We do have, of course, the rising palm oil market, which has been a big issue for us on the vegetable oil end of things here. Also, one thing which is kind of surprising for us, the U.S. export premium. So the price at the U.S. Gulf, right now only about $3 over Brazil's current bid. That's a port-to-port price. Typically, this time we're talking a $10 to $15 premium at least. So we're not too far out price on this export market either.
I did make note that there were some shipments that left Argentina that are headed for the southeastern coast of the United States, both with wheat, possibly feed grain wheat, and bean meal. Does this concern you at all?
You know, it's something we've got to expect, as, of course, those sales were made previously when there was a much wider difference, of course, between the prices. At this point in time, though, I'm not too concerned about it in the big picture. Our focus right now is, in fact, yesterday's surprising NOPA crush report, only 0.5% under last year, so that beat the trade expectation. I think, in general, in this bean market, we can probably make out a little better story for prices in future months, certainly as China restarts a very aggressive buying program for that May and beyond picture here.
On that note, exports, U.S. corn usage and exports included, this is the time we might see a better export market for corn. What do you see at this point? And then maybe you should take up ethanol usage.
You know, as far as the corn side, we have kind of mixed feelings. Even though recent export sales have been good on the corn side, and they probably will be for the next couple of weeks in front of us here, we still feel that we're going to be behind USDA's current estimates as far as exports. So on that number, we do have a little bit lower expectations than what USDA is looking at. On the other side, though, for domestic usage, you know, today's 999,000 barrel per day usage rate for last week's ethanol production. That's extremely strong, fourth highest of the marketing year since September. So bottom line is going to be lower exports, yes, but however, USDA probably will be addressing some higher usage numbers for the domestic side in future reports.
And finally, coming back full circle, you put the acreage report or acreage number survey out from yourselves today. USDA will bring theirs out at the end of the month. It will also be the same day that they release the grain stocks report. What do you expect it to show as it relates to feed and residual use?
And that's the million-dollar question everybody's going to be asking right now. I'm actually going to be suggesting it probably will have a little better usage numbers than what people would suggest. This big black hole as far as feed residual is, of course, the big question mark. But in this case, we've got expansion going on in two of the three industries here, two of the three livestock industries. Chicken is holding steady right now. Biggest issues for us in front of us are very cheap grain. I think in this case, these guys will be feeding out corn in excessive amounts here.
Rich, it's been a pleasure to talk with you.
Great, thank you.
Rich Nelson is the Director of Research for Allendale. He's located in McHenry, Illinois. He joins us here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Just one quick item out of the agricultural news for the day. This one from Washington, D.C. Earlier, the Senate considered whether it should take up the GMO labeling bill and decided against it. That's the cloture vote that it took earlier around 11:45 a.m. Central Time. Now, the GMO labeling bill, which was voluntary, will have to be reconsidered, and it may come back as mandatory. We'll see what that means as we make our way through the rest of the springtime. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, joined by Gary Schnitke, agricultural economist with U of I Extension, to talk about the decisions farmers are now making for the 2016 growing season as it relates to the rotation they may follow. One of the items that has been discussed, not often in the state of Illinois, but certainly this year, Gary, is the option to follow soybeans with soybeans. It's not a rotation that's very popular in the United States, but of course South America has done it for years, and it's possible. You took the crop budget you deal with year in and year out for corn and soybeans and wheat and altered it just a bit. What did you find the possibilities might be?
Yeah, as you mentioned, we don't often think about soybeans after soybeans, but this year we might. So we constructed a soybeans after soybeans budget. And that is basically our soybean after corn budget with a 5% lower yield in it. When we did that and calculated that soybean after soybean budget, we found that soybeans after soybeans is more profitable than corn after soybeans are projected to be in northern and southern Illinois. So this year it does look like there's a pretty good possibility that in certain regions of the state and certain farms that soybeans after soybeans will be more profitable than corn after corn.
What makes the difference in those two areas of the state as opposed to the central Illinois area?
So northern and southern Illinois, the expected yields, the soybean yield is higher relative to the corn yield. So if you look at the ratio of the soybean to corn yield, it's over 0.28 in northern and southern Illinois, and it's below that in central Illinois. The other thing is that northern Illinois has higher corn costs, likely because of drying and a number of factors, but drying corn, so that causes corn to be relatively less profitable than soybeans in that region.
How applicable do you think this will be to the 2016 growing season for most producers?
Yeah, that's a good question. But as long as we're in a low price environment, you know, corn prices below $4, soybeans is going to hang in there in profitability with corn, simply for one simple reason. Once we get above $4, corn begins to more dominate soybeans because soybean costs have to increase more than corn at those higher price levels.
And finally, producers will be wondering where the 5% decrease in soybean yield comes from. That was something I think we've heard recently.
That's from Emerson Napsinger and some of his work on soybeans after soybeans. So 5% yield loss. And we didn't build in any additions in other cost. So this would be applicable to fields without pest pressures like soybean cyst nematodes or anything else like that. This would be fields that you are pretty good at soybeans and could stand that soybean after soybean rotation.
So in summary, what do you think producers should consider for this coming year, and what do the budgets suggest?
Yeah, so starting with the obvious right now, if the previous crop is corn, all of our budgets say that soybeans will be more profitable than corn on following corn land. So it's going to be hard to make a decision to plant corn after corn this year, and that's probably pretty wide margin. Soybeans after soybeans, take a look at it. One other advantage to soybeans after soybeans is the lower cost. But, take a look at soybeans. And the other thing is that if you're looking at these returns, they're very low, and it's going to be hard for a positive net income in 2016.
Thank you so much, Gary. I do appreciate it.
Thanks, Todd.
Gary Schnitke, of course, is an Extension agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Some weeds have become resistant to the herbicides farmers use to control them. Others have lengthened their germination period, emerging later in the season, avoiding early spring control methods. University of Illinois Extension weed scientist Aaron Hager has a four-step plan farmers can use to maintain a competitive edge in corn or soybeans. It starts by planting into a weed-free seedbed.
And it's easy to achieve a weed-free seedbed by either pre-plant tillage, burn-down herbicides, or a combination of those two. Given the challenges of weather, given the challenges of resistant weed populations, very advisable not to plant any seed into any existing weed populations or any green vegetation without adequate control ahead of time.
Step two in the plan is to select an appropriate residual herbicide. Be sure it provides very good control of the most problematic weed species in a given field. And pay attention to the label, says Hager, and always apply the recommended rate for the spectrum of weeds in the field.
The third step would be to make very timely post-emergence applications. Base those not necessarily just on a calendar number of days after planting, but rather base those post decisions on adequate scouting. So return to the fields several days, begin maybe about 2 weeks after crop emergence, scout the fields, determine the weed size, the stage of crop growth stage and development stage, and make the decision on when to make that very timely application of the post-herbicide.
The final and fourth step is to go back to the field 7 to 10 days later and evaluate how well the post-emergence herbicide application worked. It may be that another germination of a weed species warrants a second application. This won't be known without a trip back to the field.
If we fail to go back and look at how well the product performed or the level of crop injury that we see soon after that application, we could have some very significant challenges later in the growing season.
The days of set it and forget it weed control have ended. Today's farmers must scout fields for competitive weeds before, during, and after the growing season. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Let's check now what's been happening with the cash grain market. Scott Butcher is here from the Anderson's Climbers facility outside of Logansport, Indiana. Do you suppose, Scott, that the higher prices on the top end have at least begun to move some soybeans and some corn in your area again?
It doesn't really feel like there's been a lot of corn movement, Todd. We have seen more bean movement, I would say, in the last 2 weeks.
Or is this because you're out of corn in the area, or just farmers are waiting for $4?
Yeah, definitely not out of corn in our area. We're just really struggling to get it to move right now. If they need cash or need to generate some income, the soybeans have been the thing to move.
Yeah, I asked if they needed $4, but I suspect you're at overs there. Is that correct?
We are, yeah. We're right at 380, 390, right in that range right there, and just have not been able to get close to $4 yet.
So farmers, that's the numbers they want, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I think $4 plus, probably not even $4 right now. It might be over that is what it takes to get it done.
Man, do you think you'll get there?
It certainly feels like we have opportunity during planting. You know, if we have any kind of delays, I don't necessarily know that. It's going to have to be a widespread problem, not a regional issue. But if we do have a wet spring or, have issues getting things planted, then, it is possible.
And your bids for the day?
Right now, cash corn here, we are 388, soybeans 888.
All right. Hey, thanks so much.
You bet.
That's Scott Butcher. He's with the Anderson's Climbers facility out of Logansport, Indiana. We'll be back with weather in just 2 minutes.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
It's National Artichoke Hearts Day. California provides nearly 100% of the U.S. crop, and 80% of that is grown in Monterey County, where the town of Castroville proclaims itself to be the artichoke center of the world, and which holds an annual festival featuring artichoke ice cream. On this day in agricultural history in 1819, the first clinical description of an allergy hay fever was delivered to a medical group in London. In 1864, Richard Roberts died. A mechanical engineer and inventor, he developed a bevy of practical machines, including the self-acting spinning mule, his most important contribution to the textile industry. Roberts is also known for the Roberts loom, which was widely adopted because of its reliability. In 1871, the first U.S. state fertilizer law was enacted in Delaware. The law proved a bust and had to be modified several times. And in 1914, Sir John Murray died. A Scottish naturalist, he coined the name oceanography, and he was one of the first to study ocean basins, deep sea deposits, and coral reef formations. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
This is the closing market report for the 16th day of March. I'm Todd Gleason. We're joined by Drew Lerner, who's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, to talk about the weather forecast. Drew, let's start in South America. Harvest conditions are like what today?
They are just about ideal in Argentina. They've been drying down. They got way too much rain back in February, and the ground was so wet that there was serious flooding going on. There was a lot of talk about reduced production because of that. But the conditions have steadily improved since then, and we do have a firm soil at the moment, and aggressive field work should be taking place along with crop maturation. We have a storm that's going to occur tomorrow into the weekend that will stop that, and we'll see a reversal once again with some wetter conditions. But it's only a 2 or 3 day period disruption, and they'll go right back into dry weather for most of next week. So they look good. Good for the most part. Now, in Brazil, there's been a problem with too much moisture in the center-south crop areas in recent weeks, and that, too, is going to come to an end. We're going to see a better environment for firming up that soil, and so the bottom line for Brazil is going to be a more aggressive harvest for at least the next week to 10 days, and there's still enough moisture around, though, to help support that second-season corn and cotton crop that follows the beans.
In the United States, it looks like the westerlies are going to change things a bit. What does it mean for us later in the week?
Well, it looks like we'll see some colder air coming in from the north, from Canada. We'll expect to see some frost and freeze conditions to occur across parts of the U.S. central and northern plains, most of the Midwest, and eventually down into the lower Mississippi River Basin area and the southeastern states. The cold, it won't be all that significant for us in the Midwest here, and probably won't be all that significant for the hard red winter wheat country either, although there'll be some burning back of new crop development, but not in a harmful way. But for the Delta and the Southeast, those areas are going to see some pretty nippy temperatures, and the crop is maybe a little bit more advanced down that way. So we might do some minor damage to production in these minor production areas. Obviously, there's not a large volume of wheat that comes out of those areas, so the impact is going to be fairly minor.
Speaking of the Delta region, an awful lot of rainfall. Will they begin to dry out enough for producers to plant corn?
We are very concerned about the Delta from that perspective. No, I don't believe that they're going to dry down enough. They will have about 5 to 6 days worth of relatively good drying conditions, and they'll just get to the point where they can get back into the fields, and then it's going to rain again. And there's some of the extended models out there that are suggesting repetitive rain possibly coming up here in the last days of March and into early April, and if that happens, we're going to have some pretty serious delays in farming in that particular area.
How about other areas of the United States on the longer term, the Midwest, the Southwest? What do you see? Anything of concern for that April beginning time frame?
Well, I think it looks like maybe the lower Ohio River Basin area will get involved on some of those wetter bias conditions as we move into April. So some of that early planting that likes to occur in Missouri and Illinois early in the month may get delayed a little bit. And also in hard red winter wheat country, it's not raining very much. There's a little system that will bring some moisture into that region here later this week, but I don't think it's going to be enough, and they're definitely going to need some significant moisture to support that crop.
That's Drew Lerner with World Weather Incorporated. I'm Todd Gleason.